So what is your favorite addition? What is your must have in an ideal breakfast dish? Is it bacon or is it sausage? You can only pick one. The other has to go away forever in breakfast. Bacon or sausage? Which pig product, as you get ready to talk about Auburn and Arkansas, which pig product is staying and which one is going?
Okay, so one, my breakfast this morning had ham, not bacon or sausage. That's fun.
Okay, but so you're a ham person. You're one of them people.
Ham, egg, and cheese, hash brown bowl was my breakfast today. Yeah. But if I have to pick one of those two, my answer is actually influenced by other meals besides breakfast.
Jeez. So we can't. So it's just not a.
No. I can give you an answer. I can give you an answer. Listen, I'm keeping bacon. And I'm getting rid of sausage.
Why?
And the reason for that is one of my absolute favorite things to eat all summer long. I love BLTs. And I love tomato sandwiches. I probably in the summer, every single day, my lunch is one of those two sandwiches.
Okay.
And so I am willing to get rid of sausage forever. Yeah. If it means I get to keep BLTs on the menu for lunchtime.
No, my dumb rule for this conversation was it goes away for breakfast. Forever.
Oh,
you can have it other. I know it's a dumb rule. This is what happens. Hey, this is what happens when Lindsay lets me have the cold open.
Yeah.
In our business, this is called the cold open. And when he gives me the cold open, this is the kind of nonsense that we get.
Zach should have told you.
Never let Brad have the cold open. It will turn into nonsense.
Hey, at least it was pig-based nonsense and not octopi.
Right.
This makes a lot more sense given who we're playing. We're not playing the octopi.
Nobody wants to eat like an octopus for breakfast.
I'm sure there's somewhere where that's a delicacy for breakfast.
Or multiple octopuses. Nobody wants to eat that for breakfast.
No. Octopodes, yeah.
Octopuses. That's the plural for octopus. We went through this a year ago when we started this over on Village Vice. It's not octopi. It's not octopods. It's not. It's octopodes.
Yeah, nope. Octopuses. Got it.
Yes.
Octopuses. Yeah.
Did you look that up?
No. I was looking to see, is there a sports team called the so that I could we could ever have a reason to actually talk about this.
I see.
We're supposed to be talking about pigs because it's Arkansas, and instead we've gotten off on a tangent. Detroit Red Wings have the whole throw one on there, but now I was trying to see, is there a sports team called the Octopus? And there is not.
No, you got the Kraken.
But you do have the Kraken.
Not the Octopuses.
I am going to look it up later, though, because I feel like octopodes should be allowed. So
it's not. It's not accurate.
That's what I'm hearing. That's what I'm hearing from the king of octopuses.
How many others have it over their shoulder? Nope. Nobody else has it over their shoulder. Some people are watching, by the way, for the first time ever noticing there's an octopus over my shoulder. You've watched for months and you haven't realized that blue thing in the background. Yep. That's an octopus.
Over his right shoulder. Yep.
Thanks for paying attention.
I'm going to be honest. I never noticed it back there. It's just small enough. It's just small enough where I never actually saw what it was.
Yep.
So there you go.
You'll never not see it now.
There you go. Welcome to the Barn Baseball Show.
Should we talk baseball now? Yeah.
Let's talk baseball. Lindsey Crosby, Brad Law. Excited to share. We'll be back with us early next week. But Auburn takes on what we've been hinting around for 4 minutes here. Auburn takes on Arkansas for three this weekend, starting tonight through Saturday. And honestly, Brad, it kind of feels like I'm not going to say any series is a must win.
Yeah,
that's just not kind of how baseball works.
Correct.
But I will say that both teams are in a place where a winning series would be really helpful. The Tigers have dropped four straight. They got swept by Alabama over the weekend. Never the team you want to get swept by. And they got run ruled in one of those games. They got run ruled on Tuesday versus Georgia Tech. We'll get to that in a minute. Arkansas has also lost four straight games.
Yep.
Because they got swept by Florida over the weekend, and then they went on the road to Missouri State and lost on Tuesday. I will say, I would much rather lose a midweek on the road to a top five team in Georgia Tech than to lose a midweek on the road at Missouri State.
I mean, yeah, if you have to choose, I don't like losing those midweek games to anybody on the road, at home, top five team, unranked team. Yeah, both these teams come in on four-game losing streaks, very different ways. Both teams are 4-5 in the league. Both teams are ranked like between 11 and 20, so it's another top 20 matchup at Plainsman Park. Both fan base, like I feel like the Arkansas fan base maybe has been more deeply invested in baseball longer than the Auburn fan base, like a large chunk of it. Maybe not the people who watch this show or listen to this show, but so I think their people may have a little better understanding of, all right, 4-5 in the league, just got swept. Well, just go win the next series. As opposed to, man, bricks are falling everywhere and the whole thing is shot. I mean, it's, again, being swept is never good, but it's baseball. Auburn swept opening weekend of conference play, so that kind of negated that. Your 4-5 last year hosted a super regional, got swept on the road twice before Easter last year. Still hosted a super regional with the number good four point. Overall seed. So, like, it is fine now. But if you keep losing series, it goes from it's okay to it's not okay in a hurry. You're just not there yet. I'm not saying it looks great where you are right now. What I'm saying is you got some time before it's time to, you know, sack the bats.
Yeah, you're not. This is not the end of the world just yet. But need to do some stuff. Before we get into that, do you want to talk about Georgia Tech real quick? You were obviously there. And it just, I know that that's a tiny ballpark. Mm-hmm. I know that that is not considered to be a pitcher friendly place to play baseball. I don't think I realized exactly how small it was.
Yeah.
Even though I've talked about it. Until Tuesday, when we saw balls that didn't look like they were hit that well leaving the yard. What was your impression in person there from the press box, which is behind home plate?
Yep.
What a concept. Don't get mad at me, George. What was your impression of how the park played? Was it as tiny as it looked on TV?
Oh, yeah, yeah, and the ball flew even more than it looked on TV. Like, in, it's 350 to right center, and you had right-handed hit, and the ball flies out there.
Yeah.
So, because you're downtown, there's a tree line, it's a jet stream.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you had right-handed hitters for Georgia Tech that were hitting the other way on purpose, because they knew if they could just get it up in the air. I mean, yeah, you had a guy hit what looked like a routine, like, deep fly ball. Hit it 430 feet. Opposite field. Because that's the way that ballpark plays.
Yeah.
And they do that. They're built for power. Mm-hmm. So, I the result wasn't shocking. There were some things that happened in the game that were shocking, and we can go down that road and talk about it a little bit. But the way the ballpark played and the way Georgia Tech approached the game offensively were the least surprising things, in my opinion.
Yeah. Get the ball in the air, you know, that way, whether you're a lefty or a righty, and just, you know, see if you've got it, if there's enough on it where the wind can take it out.
Yep.
And it kind of feels like, outside of Bubs homer, that maybe our guys weren't necessarily, I don't know, I guess maybe aware of how easy it felt like it could be to get a fly ball out that way. Mm-hmm. I know that I was talking to Sonny about this on Tuesday. It's extremely hard to aim a hit, right? Extremely hard to say, I'm going to put the ball here. But I do feel like Tech's pitching was trying to avoid leaving the ball in a place where it could be put up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing everything they could. They understood we have to get the ball down. If we get the ball up in the air, it's gone. And so it just felt like they, knowing the ballpark like they did, they had the perfect offensive game plan, but pitching wise, there was a concentrated effort to prevent Auburn from doing the same.
For sure. You hit to a ballpark and you pitch to your ballpark in, in the same manner. And that game, though, like Auburn popped a couple of balls up early where, all right, maybe they're trying to change the approach from getting to the top of the baseball to getting it up in the air. But at the end of the day, the third inning was the deciding inning of the ball game. And, you know, you loaded the bases with one out and didn't get anything out of it. And the hit that loaded the bases was the last hit Auburn got in that game. The game turned. When they went bases loaded, one out, and didn't score, trailing 6-3. I mean, you got to go ahead run at the plate with one out and tying runs on base and didn't get anything. And, you know, the feeling in the entire in the ballpark was Georgia Tech is going to score and score and score and score.
You got to keep up.
You have to score and score and score and score. And unfortunately, like, you had a lot of game left after that third inning, but it felt like it took the wind out of their sails completely. I'll say this, playing, I've been trying to think of an analogy that was appropriate for this. Playing their fifth game away from home in 8 days felt like if your elevator is out at your office and you got to climb 10 flights of stairs multiple times. And then to let off steam, you go to the gym at night, and instead of a light upper body day, you're told it's heavy leg day. That's what Tuesday felt like. It felt like heavy leg day at the end of a day where you've already had to put, like, you're already taxed psychologically. And now the team that struggled to put some stuff together offensively has a three-run inning and loads the bases in the next inning. But then that was it. But after that, there was nothing left, and they could not find any reserve in the tank to fight for at-bats and have good at-bats and hit balls hard. They just couldn't do that consistently after that.
Yeah, and I think the frustrating part, and I'm not blaming anybody, obviously this is just kind of an observation, is when you had those bases loaded, strikeout, and a pop out. Like, it wasn't competitive balls in play. And I think that's the hardest part here. Now, pitching change was part of that. Dylan Woolley came in, did a really good job, but I think that's part of it. And for the most part, I mean, it feels like, and this is kind of a stretch, like going back to the Alabama series, it feels like some of the quality of the batted balls hasn't necessarily reflected in the results.
Yeah.
I feel like in the Alabama series, there were some hard hit baseballs that just didn't fall. And then, you know, you get to Georgia Tech and like you said, end of a long road trip kind of stuff. You're just kind of worn out here a little bit. A lot of hard outs. Yeah. I feel like both Alabama and Georgia Tech. And so at a certain point, to your point, you're already physically tired. It's deflating too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought more so from the Alabama series, not as many hard hit balls on Friday. The last two games of the series, they hit some really hard balls right at guys. And Alabama had some bloops that fell. And in close games, that kind of wound up being the difference. But still, this team is looking for more consistent hard contact. They just haven't been able to get it consistently in these conference games. Again, Tuesday's an anomaly. You're not pitching any SEC game the way you pitch Tuesday night. Georgia Tech's not going to pitch an ACC game the way they pitch Tuesday night. It's kind of an anomaly. And the team split that season series. So the home team won both games convincingly. But as you get into conference play, the stuff you got to find is some toughness and some hard hit balls. Much harder contact in these conference games.
Yeah. Speaking of, let's talk about the Arkansas pitchers that we'll expect to see. I think Hunter Dietz, Gabe Gackel, are both really interesting pitchers. Offensively, what they do, we'll do all of that next, right here on the Barn Baseball Show. Welcome back to the Barn Baseball Show. Lindsey Crosby, the Octopus's enthusiast, Brad Law, has one in his office there. Also have an eagle. I noticed the eagle. I never noticed the octopus. But Arkansas. Okay, we've kind of talked about the stakes of the series, right? Both teams, four game losing streaks and all that. When you look at the actual matchups, because of the timing of the series, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Auburn made a very logical move, and they took Andreas Alvarez from Tuesday, where he leads the SEC and is like fourth in the NCAA with an ERA under one, and they moved him to Thursday, allowing Jake Marciano to stay on Friday, and they technically, or officially, still have a TBA for Saturday. We don't know, is it going to be Petrovic? Is it going to be Jackson Sanders? You know, is somebody else? We don't know. But we do know for Arkansas, Alvarez will take on right-hand pitcher Gabe. I assume it's Gakel, G-A-E-C-K-L-E.
Yeah. Gakel.
Okay. Gabe Gakel. Mm-hmm. Really interesting when you look at draft eligible right-hander. He's a junior. Kind of like high three-quarter slot. It's a kind of a drop and drive delivery. Has touched 99 with the fastball. Like the fastball is there, as well as multiple breaking balls. He can get swing and miss on a slider. He can get swing and miss on a curveball. And he has a changeup. So I feel like in college, you don't always, this is that whole SEC game one guy. You don't always see a pitcher though, that's, I've got four pitches and they're all really good. I've got the velocity base. Like I see why he is potentially a first round draft pick this summer. Yeah. But I keep thinking about how we've seen this Auburn lineup at times struggle with really good breaking balls. And you see a guy that has two of them. And that's where I think I'm a little bit concerned about what they're going to be able to do tonight against Gakel.
It's all about his control. I think. I mean, he's coming off a start. Gakel is ninth among active SEC pitchers in strikeouts, has over 180 career strikeouts. Mm-hmm. Started five games in the league last year, was okay. He was fine. Like 3-2, earned run average, almost five in league games. So far this year, he's 3-2 with an ERA of 3.5. Last week against Florida, an inning and a third, four walks, just one hit. But he gave up three runs because he walked four guys. You don't have to give up a ton of hits if you're walking people. So now he didn't throw a ton of pitches last week. So he's fresh, even with a day less rest.
Yeah.
But can he find his control? Auburn has been patient at times at the plate. They don't mind. Like the Sunday game against Alabama, I think there were five hit batters and four walks, and they got free base runners, just couldn't knock them in. I think Gakel, especially early, if you're patient, you could get some early base runners. And but it's longevity. Can you keep him? If he's landing both breaking balls for strikes, it's tough. That's a tough day.
It's going to be a long day for you there if that happens.
Yeah.
I do think about this pin for Arkansas. I feel like it's not, I'm not saying it's a three-headed monster, right? They have more than three, but when you kind of go and you look at Parker Coyle, Ethan McIlvain, Steele Eaves, who's I think also started a game, like those are their three of their most frequently used relievers.
Yeah.
And outside of that, it's a lot of, you know, hey, this guy's a midweek guy who might occasionally work in relief. You know, this guy's a spot starter. Those are kind of your three guys. Can you get Gakel out of the game early? I think it kind of comes back to that Florida thing. Like, you have to be patient. But at the same time, you have to be willing to pull the trigger in the zone. It's a really tough balancing act.
Yeah, well, what happens game one affects games two and games three and game three. Yep. And what you just can't have, what like you hate, the worst case scenario for a team in league play is to be on the wrong end of a game one blowout. Because now you're going to conserve some of your bullpen arms too, but so are they, and they're going to have a game in the series. Yeah. So they're going to use their top bullpen guys game two, game three to try to win the series, not to win the first game. So yeah, you're trying to see it's a big chess match. Can you get to the starter early? Can you draw the top bullpen arms out early? Because Auburn has been pretty good historically.
Yeah.
When they face a reliever the second time in a weekend. But can you force that to happen with how you perform offensively in game one? It's been a minute since, it's been a couple of weeks since Auburn has done that to a team.
Yeah. And so, you know, we'll see kind of how that works. They haven't announced starters for games two and three. Hunter Dietz, I haven't seen anything about him being injured. It would make sense that he would be one of the guys they would throw.
Yeah.
I am, like, having watched some of it, you know, big lefty, like 6'6". But he's touching upper 90s with his heater. He's got some sort of breaking ball. I don't know if it's a slider or a cutter, but it's in like the upper 80s. He's got a curveball in the lower 80s. Another guy, and this is just kind of, this is the Dave Van Horn kind of guys. Like, we're throwing multiple breaking balls. We can usually land them for strikes. We've got a big fastball. It doesn't get easier over the weekend with the starters.
Yeah.
But I do wonder about the depth of the Arkansas offense. Because when you look at these guys, you know, Ryder Helfrich, I think, is a fantastic catcher who is also, he leads the team in homers with 9. I think he's got 5 stolen bases as well. And they have a handful of guys that are 7, 8 stolen bases, things like that. But it is a lower batting average offense. I think on the whole, they're hitting 280, which is not bad. But like, they've got 3 guys hitting over 300 on the season, not just conference play, like on the season. 3 guys hitting over 300. Ryder Helfrich hitting 290, which is not bad, but it's not like we see some of these teams that Auburn faces where they've got 5 guys hitting over 300 and they've got 3 of them hitting over 350, and it's a very intimidating lineup. This feels like a lineup that can pop you for a homer from almost any spot in it.
Yeah,
but they're not going to, and this is, I'm wishful thinking, I guess, they're not going to be spraying a ton of base hits every single inning all over the yard.
Yeah.
It's more boom or bust with this offense, it feels like.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that plays to the strength of the Auburn pitching staff. That's, you know, as was the case over the weekend, games 2 and 3 against Alabama. Not so much against Georgia Tech, just because they mashed the ball anyway, but.
Yeah.
Don't walk, guys. Don't make errors. The fielding's got to be cleaner. It's got to be cleaner. Every error that Auburn committed, and in each of the 3 games of the series against Alabama and the errors they committed Tuesday against Georgia Tech, led directly to runs.
They got cashed in every time.
So walks are getting cashed in. Errors are getting cashed in. That's the difference in winning or losing openers or any game in conference play. And Andreas Alvarez has been, like, he's had his one inning where he gets it on track, snapped into the track, and then he's been dynamic. Can he do that again against SEC competition? He did it against Georgia Tech 2 weeks ago. He did it last year in regionals and in supers, right? Can he do that again against Arkansas? So, like, he's done it against good competition. He hasn't just done it in these midweek games against quote unquote lesser competition.
Yeah.
He's just got to have it again tonight.
On the defensive note, not to pivot back to that real quick, but 25 errors for Auburn this season. I know that Butch talked early in the season, I think actually before the season started with us, about being willing to sacrifice a little bit of defense to get better bats in the lineup, that he had seen other SEC teams make that intentional shift in the last most recent seasons and not be overly punished for it, right? It paid off. The extra offense outweighed the defensive issues. I'm trying to figure out for Auburn, has it, and I'm not saying anything about, like, right now this is not the best defensive lineup you can roll out there or whatever, has it been worth it for Auburn having made this shift? Yeah. Having, because, like, I think we've all kind of acknowledged, like, Ryan Farber was considered to be probably the best shortstop going into the season. He did have 3 errors in early playing time, but they've been using Brandon McCrane and Eric Guevara at shortstop because those are better hitters.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure out, does Auburn need to go back to Butch's old way of the best possible defensive lineup to help his pitchers? Or at this point, can you not afford to sacrifice offense given where you are coming off four straight losses?
Yeah, because you're not reaping the benefits of the offense or the defense right now at this point. Yeah, and now, exactly. Like Guevara and Bub had errors against Georgia Tech in the SEC Bubs was game.
Three base error, right?
Yep. Seven errors in nine conference games. Those have led to six unearned runs. Six of the 37 runs allowed have been unearned runs. That's almost one unearned run a game. Two of those are McCrane, but like the others, like one is Frelick, one is Blue, two is McCrane. McCrane's really the only guy, and he's played every game at short. I don't know what change, you know. I don't know what you would change. I don't know what substitution you would make with Farber injured and unavailable.
Yeah.
I don't know what change you would make there. So
that's the hard part, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know really what options you have at this point, other than guys just have to lock in. They've got to figure it out. And again, that's okay in baseball. More than some other sports, mm-hmm. It's okay to like throw a kid in the pool and say, you figured it out. Just got
to
do it,
man. You got to do it. Yeah. It's one of those, to me, it's a really interesting kind of thought experiment about like, hey, I don't know at this point. It's hard to argue where we sit right now. Granted, coming off four losses, you're a little bit cloudy. It's hard to argue that payoff has directly benefited the win-loss column. But at the same time, like to your point, you can't undo it now because of injuries. Well,
and I don't know that it's hurt either in wins and losses in these games. Because again, you're not
losing because of the errors. Yeah.
No, and you're not going to make change. Even if you did, like, let's say you lost a couple of games because Chris Rembert's errors at second base. He's made two in league play. Even if you lost games, you ain't moving Chris Rembert.
No.
You're not moving an All-American type player.
Nope.
You believe in these guys too much. You just have to go, dadgummit, go get the next one. And again, that's kind of where I am with like my understanding has grown so much. College baseball different from Major League Baseball, but
yeah.
You don't have to make wholesale changes after every bad game or after every bad weekend. It doesn't mean you're endorsing the performance to not make changes. It is a very long season. Now, if the lack of performance continues for another couple of weeks, clearly you have to make some wholesale changes.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you show belief and faith in your guys and you let them go figure it out. So,
yeah, like I think what people have to remember after this is like once this weekend is done, you only have six more SEC series to go.
Yep.
Like it's just now April. You're going to play the SEC tournament is not until mid-May. And then regionals would be the beginning of June. So,
yeah.
We've got again, time, just, and I know.
Yeah, just again for comparison, both these teams are 4-5 coming in this weekend. Auburn was 4-5 last year at this point in the season. Mm-hmm. Auburn was swept twice on the road before Easter. Doesn't mean it's okay. It doesn't mean like, oh, that's okay. That's a sense. No, it just means you can get a lot of good places even with that. Auburn hosted in 23 and started like 3-12 or 5-10 or some crazy bad start to the league just 3 years ago. And they hosted. So really,
if people are worried, it's early.
Let's stay on the train rather than pump the brakes at this point.
I think that's a good way to put that. Thank you. That's good. Okay. So if Auburn is to win this series at home versus Arkansas, which like, let's be clear.
Yep.
Auburn is 13-4 at home this season and they've won 12 of the last 13 regular season home series dating back to the end of the 2024 season. So
yep.
They should be favored to win this series, but if they do, who is the player we're going to look back on Tuesday and say, hey, that or Monday or whenever we do the next show,
yeah,
that guy is the reason Auburn won this series.
Could be Andreas Alvarez, could be Ryan Hetzler because you might have him closed twice Thursday, Saturday. But I'll go offense. Auburn's got to break out offensively to you know, get its confidence back. And I think it's got to be one of these left-handed hitting sophomores, either Frelick or Terrell. One of those two guys has to go, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be one of the leaders on this team. I'm going to do it vocally, and I'm going to do it by my play. So I'll go either Chase or Bub.
I think I was going to go with Chase. That was kind of what I was thinking, too. The thing that kind of surprises me is Auburn in conference play has 3 home runs.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Their slugging's under 300.
Yeah. They're slugging 282 as a team. Yeah. And there's nobody. I'm sorry. There's one guy. Two slugging over 350.
Yeah.
Like that's. And I feel like if there's anybody, Bub has the capacity to do it. We saw him get one. We've seen him hit one in conference play and he hit one on Tuesday. But I feel like Chase Frelick is the one that has the swing that is geared towards doing this. And we've seen him in non-con play pop these things out to right, really peppered the hitting lab.
Chase has 3 doubles. Nobody else on the team has more than one in SEC games. Chase with 3 extra base hits. 2 other guys have, like Rembert has a homer and a double. Bingaman has a homer and a double. Nobody else has more than one extra base hit in league play.
Nobody's hitting 300 in league play.
You got to split a gap. Like you got to, but not just 300, like not just singles. You got to split a gap every now and then. You gotta go down the line. You gotta clear the bases every now and if you're gonna win consistently in the SEC. Because otherwise you're forcing your pitchers to just be perfect all the time. That's not realistic.
It's not sustainable, no.
You know, do they still have the best ERA among SEC teams?
I believe so. Last I looked.
If you got the number one ERA in the league, you should be several games above 500 in conference play.
And we're just not there yet.
Not there yet. Not there yet.
But it can be done. It can be done. Hang on, I've got it here. I'm sorry. Technically, Texas just passed us. We are second at 306. Texas is number one at 293.
Okay.
That is overall numbers, though. Conference, obviously, we're third in conference. Even with the losses you've had, we're still third in conference play for ERA.
Yep. Yeah, to have a top 2 or 3 ERA, you should be above 500 in the league. So, and all it takes is one more series to do that. I mean, one series where you lock in offensively and everybody's feeling good again.
Yep. Okay. Prediction here?
2 out of 3.
I think I'm going to go 2-1. Yeah, 2 out of 3.
Yep.
I'm going to go 2-1. I don't know which game they won't win. I think for a little while we were trying to pick some of that. But 2-1, I think, is the most likely outcome here.
Yep.
And I think it does require some sort of, I'm not going to say superhuman, but some sort of heroic effort from Arkansas starters to prevent that. I think it's if Auburn does struggle this weekend, it's going to be because Dietz, Gackle, I can't remember what you said.
Gackle.
You'll get it right on the broadcast. Gackle, there you go.
For sure.
That these guys absolutely shove. I think that'll be like if Arkansas wins a series, it's those starters. Auburn can't get them out of the game. Auburn can't seem to figure them out. And then they get in too big of a hole to rally late. So, but any final thoughts on this one?
Arkansas's numbers when scoring first and when the opponent scores first. There's a pretty marked difference in the two, even though it's a long game. Typically, when Arkansas scores first, it wins. When it doesn't score first, it doesn't win. So, Auburn scored first in all 3 games on the road last weekend, scored in the first inning all 3 games against Alabama. They got to be and scored in the second inning against Georgia Tech. So if they can score early and build some momentum, maybe get the crowd more involved in the game and get them behind them, make it a little more difficult on Arkansas, maybe you can use that as momentum. But I think scoring early is a key in this game.
Yeah, and there's going to be plenty of reason to get to the ballpark early and fill it up this weekend. Tonight is the double discount diamond deal days, which is hard to say, but $1.25 hot dogs, $2.50 domestic beers. Friday, they are raffling off Pit Vipers, but also a pregame flyover. Those are always fun.
They're raffling off what?
Pit Vipers. Those are the baseball sunglasses that all the kids love.
Crazy-looking
sunglasses. They're not raffling off snakes.
Okay, good.
They're not raffling off a snake. No.
Because I have to be honest, Lindsay, I was about to look up something else, and I was about 60% paying attention. Yeah. And I got to tell you, like, I know people from up in Sand Mountain in that area where they would take that very seriously and come down and get some pit vipers. People might come up from Andalusia for the Rattlesnake Rodeo if Auburn's giving away snakes at a game. But I wouldn't endorse that. I would think that would be highly dangerous.
I do believe they would probably say, hey, our risk mitigation folks are going to say no on this one for obvious reasons. But in lieu of snakes.
Yeah, I'm an idiot.
No, you are not. You're just you were thinking about more octopuses and their facts versus snakes. And then on Saturday, we're bringing back the Plainsman Plaza. So that'll open at 11 a.m. And you have, you know, you go in through the gates, all the fun stuff to do, the pregame block party prior to the game.
What's the thing that they're doing tonight called? Is it the dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge?
Pretty much the double discount diamond deal days.
Yeah, that's what I said. Dodge, duck, dive, dip, dive, and dodge.
And dodge, yeah. Dodge twice.
Dodge.
Yeah, from Dodgeball. I got the reference.
Good.
It's
good.
I am not the person to be giving five consecutive alliterative words to read. The person to do that to. You're the professional on the ad reads.
What if we gave away actual pit vipers and we had Jake the Snake Roberts come to do an appearance? What if as you walked into the gates, you could get a picture with Jake the Snake Roberts and then you get your pit viper and take it to your seat?
You know, I am going to point out that we've done a whole thing around a camel. If we could do a thing around a camel,
but we don't we don't do Bark in the Park anymore with the dogs. So,
which is a shame because I'd love to bring Bandit.
If we can't do dogs, then of course we can't do pit vipers.
Here's my question. Jake the Snake Roberts is from Texas. Mm-hmm. So how do we know that he wouldn't just show up wearing like Texas A&M gear? I don't know.
He's originally from Georgia.
He is?
Yeah. Originally.
Oh. Okay. I know he was born in Texas.
But he was always introduced as being from Stone Mountain, Georgia.
That's right. He was built at Stone Mountain, Georgia. That's right. Okay. Mm-hmm. He must have moved as a kid or something, I guess.
We all know that's real. It had to be true if he was billed as.
Oh, yeah. There. Absolutely. Yeah. Wrestling is, they never change, you know, things like names or locations or anything.
Again, I'm an idiot. I took this Pit Viper thing way too far, and I apologize to everybody for it. Okay, sincerely.
No, I think we're good here. I think this has been one of the more distractible but still entertaining shows that we've had.
Look,
you know,
we hope it's a great series this week, and we hope to see everybody at the ballpark. And if you can't be there, we hope you'll listen to it on the radio, and we know that you'll catch all of the post-game reaction coverage that is available out there in internet land.
Yeah. And listen, ESPN2 tonight, Friday and Saturday, SEC Network Plus. Honestly, I'm going to have my TV muted because I'm going to be plugged into Bradford T. Law for the all three games.
Thank you. And Jason Caldwell.
I talk about it. Yeah. Jason calls homers. People who were surprised by that, he always does that in the press box. It's not like that was a one-time he got lucky. That is what Jason Caldwell does all the time.
Yeah. Jason's excellent. I love working with Jason. Love working with Andy, too. I don't want to get back to Andy that I said I didn't love working with Andy. I love working with Andy. Working with Jason is just different. So we got that for you this weekend.
You don't
Andy's off calling the NIT.
Yeah. You don't have to, like, hand off who does play-by-play when you're with Jason. No. You get to do all-nine innings.
That's true. All I have to hand off to him is a couple of live reads per game.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So you tend to work more with Jason than with Andy because Andy calls some of the game too. So
you're right.
Working harder without Andy. This is why you need Andy. See, Andy, I know he's listening. So this is why you need Andy.
Yeah.
But there you go. All right. That'll do it for maybe the longest episode of the Barn Baseball Show we've ever done.
Yep. Probably.
But for Brad Law, I'm Lindsey Crosby. We'll talk to you next time on the Barn Baseball Show.